Welcome to Disruptive Successor, a show for next generation leaders in family businesses and entrepreneurs who want to disrupt the status quo and take their existing business to a whole new level. We all know that what got us here isn't going to get us there. This show will provide inspiration, advice, and resources to help you create massive impact.
This podcast is sponsored by myself, Jonathan Goldhill, and my company, The Goldhill Group, where we provide coaching for growing companies. I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and my purpose is simple: to guide entrepreneurial leaders in family businesses towards more freedom and fulfillment. I want entrepreneurs to get clarity around the changes that will make them and their businesses more successful so they can experience the same freedom I've enjoyed in my life. Our proven practices challenge business owners to think differently about their business and how they're running it, and quite literally become game changers in our clients' companies. Learn more at thegoldhillgroup.com website, where you can schedule your free strategy session. Hi, it's Jonathan Goldhill, and welcome back to another episode of the Disruptive Successor Show. Today, we're going to be talking about media buying, and how to target people in the media using generational thinking and media. My guest today is Mary Ann Pruitt. She is the CEO and president at Mosaic Media, an interesting collection of media buying experts and creative strategists who negotiate, purchase, and monitor advertising space and airtime. Mary Ann is based out of Alaska, but interestingly enough, she works worldwide, and she is involved with a team of people that negotiate, purchase, and monitor advertising space and airtime. She's here today to share some marketing wisdom gleaned from her extensive career in media strategy and how it relates to the ever-evolving climate of media. Mary Ann, welcome to my show today.
Thanks, Jonathan, for having me on. I'm really excited about this conversation.
Okay, I think you're the first person I've had from Anchorage, Alaska. It's probably been an interesting journey to build a business from so far away. And I think that's a great first place to start, because most people would not think about how to manage a business from so far away. How do you do it?
You know, it's so funny. I often say I live in Alaska. It's my home. Alaska is my home, right? And then I say, but only 5% of our work is here and the rest is in the rest of the world. And so you really do. I operate on an East Coast time frame personally. Our team is broken up in the various time zones of where we're spread out throughout the world. All of our team is in the US, but we do work worldwide work. So it's very interesting. And you're having to scale your company based off of what the client demands are, right? So the majority of your work, for the stuff that I work on, is East Coast. So that's where my time zones stay on a regular basis. You travel where you can, you do what you can do, but you adjust to what the clients are demanding and what they're looking for, right?
Sure. Well, certainly COVID-19, or now we can maybe refer to it as COVID-2022. Yeah. I don't know. It's changed the face of media quite a bit.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit how it's changed the face of media.
It's interesting. We see so many different segments and tactics that have evolved, but the biggest change that we probably have seen is actually the consumer behavior habits. Mm-hmm. So the individual and the generational breakup and makeup of everybody has changed habits in a different way for everyone. So our older, to give an example, older generations have actually started to consume media where it really was an evolution to get to social media in the next 10 to 15 years, the way they did overnight with COVID. Overnight with COVID, if you were over the age of 65, you got onto social media really quick. Everything became digital for you. Were you still consuming your like nightly news? Yes. And your morning news? Yes. But you were consuming for news on social media like we've never seen that generation even care about before. So it's very interesting. And every generation had this different tweak that we saw in these patterns that we see throughout when their world was turned upside down and confused. They didn't know what to do. And the interesting thing about it is that their habits changed and they haven't gone back. they've stayed the same over the last couple of years. So we've had almost, you know, two solid years of this, of true habit changing, formatting, and seeing how people are consuming media, that we really do, as marketers, we have to think about that. And when we're writing our marketing plans and when we're writing our media plans.
So let's give us a few examples. So if we're talking to baby boomers, if that's our, mm-hmm. our market, are we advertising on Facebook because that's where they're hanging out now? Or is it all online, or are they still in traditional media pretty heavily?
So the smaller the market, the more of a play that we saw traditional media still play in that role. So that sense. Role was still there. So the smaller the market you were, the more you cared about your, and in the baby boomer specifically, we actually saw this in the younger generations as well, but you saw this increase of media consumption as a whole, mm-hmm. And the news side of it. The one thing that's really fascinating about baby boomers specifically, as well as traditionalists, but mostly, you know, baby boomers in that realm of both I break baby boomers out into the older and the younger baby boomers, right? Sure. 'Cause they're kind of their own beast. We can do the same thing with millennials, where you have the older and the younger. But sure. When you look at it that way, these consumer habits of local consumption, but they turn to social media, not for social. That's what was fascinating with baby boomers. They turned to social media for news consumption,
right?
Where we saw younger generations. So the millennials actually turned to social media for comfort and social, mm-hmm. and to stay on what's happening personally with what's going on, where baby boomers were on social media to find out what was happening in their town. What were the things that they needed to do? What were the precautions that they needed to take? How did they protect their family? And we saw the younger generations actually turn to traditional media to find out what to do for their family, to find out their local counts. It was very fascinating how each generation actually reacted differently in that.
So where's the younger generation, the millennials, getting their news from?
So they are getting, it's a combination of all the above. Mm-hmm. They started to look to more traditional platforms than they ever had before, as if they were new platforms. So they're looking at local right. radio, local TV going, oh my gosh, this is amazing right. knowledge. This is great information. Mm-hmm. But they're consuming it in a way that older generations haven't in the past. They're consuming it digitally. They are consuming it. The radio side of it, they're consuming it on actual radio. And it was really what is happening in my town, what is happening specific to me. So the smaller the town, that funnel got smaller for them, the more important that local touch was, and that how much more they were consuming that local media.
Well, you're obviously an expert on this subject. So let me ask you, with the clients that you work with, do you draw like a map of their market and try and understand where their market is hanging out and, do a like a bubble map, breaking it down like that? How do you go about this?
Yeah. So one of the first things you're going to do is identify the two top things that you want to identify when you're building a media plan and when you're building something in it, the media plan that goes inside of your marketing plan. Oftentimes people confuse your media plan and your marketing plan to be the same thing. And Jonathan, you know, they are not.
They are not the same thing.
Exactly. Yeah, the media plan fits within. It's a puzzle piece, right?
The media plan is basically the buying piece of what you're exactly. going to buy, where you're going to buy, when, how exactly. much. The marketing plan communicates the message and has some general overview on the medium.
Exactly. And so in the, what are you looking at your ROI on the spend? How are you targeting that? The first two things that you need to clearly identify is who am I targeting and where are they? Mm-hmm. Those are the first two things that you're going to look at. And in today's world, each market, we call them geos and demos. Those are the demo of the individual that we're targeting.
Yeah.
And I'll take that even further. We are gone are the days of saying that, you know, it's women 25-54 that we're targeting. Remember back right. in the day, that's how we targeted, right?
Yeah.
I'm targeting a woman 25-54. No. The 25-year-old woman and the 54-year-old woman are two totally different people.
Plus, the psychographics of the person you're targeting might be very different. I mean, you might be targeting someone who's got maybe a political affiliation or has got that's different from the other party or has some different ideas about, you know, what's appropriate, decorum, social. I mean, the exactly. messaging's got to be very different based on who you're targeting, I think.
And how you're targeting them. So what you're looking at, instead of calling them demos anymore, I really like to use personas because that mm-hmm. is what yeah. we're looking at, right?
Of course.
I'm looking, like you said, if I'm looking at a 25-year-old woman that has a specific political leaning, that has pets, that doesn't have children, doesn't, you know, like is single, has right. this kind of income, drives this kind of car, potentially in the market for a new car, but maybe in a market for a new house. Like I'm getting really in depth there, and their profession is at this level. They're a director or they're, you know, whatever the position that they're in. We can now, the data sets are there for us and the information is there for us to be able to target those personas specifically in that. So when we're looking at targeting and how do we do it, the persona is very important in identifying who that key persona is and how we're targeting that. And then where are they? What are the key markets that we want to focus on? Because your budget's going to go further if you're identifying clearly, okay, this is the market that I want to look at, because my strategy in a small town in Wisconsin versus New York City is going to be different, but my target markets might be, my persona, target personas may be both there, but I can't target New York City the same way I do as, you know, La Crosse, Wisconsin. I can't. So I need to target those specifically of what we want to do to target that persona there.
Well, I think that's an area where you and I maybe overlap, or, and that may be the only area of overlap besides maybe marketing planning work, but is developing your ideal client profile. Yes. Is such an important exercise. It yes. was something that really was important for me in developing my coaching business and developing what I consider to be a blue ocean strategy, going yeah. after what I call disruptive successors, which are next generation leaders that are trying to, that are by introducing either technology or changing the product or service or transferring ownership and transferring leadership and getting rid of some of the old folks that are maybe working in the company, they're disruptive successors. And so identifying your ICP, your ideal client profile, your persona, your avatar, and developing all your marketing towards that person, using imagery, using messaging, languaging, you know, so important.
It's so important, but it's so overlooked. And I yes. think that that's the part that people, you know, I think we do get caught into an old way of doing it because it's what we've been taught, is to think through demographic as opposed to who is this ideal customer that I am looking for. And frankly, the more niche I get, the more targeted I can be, and the more that customer can be at my doorstep with certain targeting and certain things that I can do. Like you said, with the imagery that you're showing them, the messaging that you're showing them, and how you're reaching them. There's very targeted ways that we can do this. We don't have to do the shotgun approach anymore of just reaching all these demographics at once.
So we're going into the marketing plan. Let's talk about that. I'm sure that's part of your work with your clients. And you develop the ideal client profile as part of that work. What's next?
Well, for us, we hang out in that media space solely. So that's where our expertise is. So what is next is, again, you're figuring out who that ideal customer is and where are they. Then from there, you figure out where to identify and use your budget there. So what budget is it going to take in my various markets? If I have 10 target markets that I have to look at, but really, truly, I have the budget for 4 or 2, it's okay to own the 2 that you're in. And I think right. that's something that people get very caught up, and brands get very caught up into, is, but I have 10 target markets that I have to be in. I want to be in all the 10 of these. It is okay to pick.
How do you know where they're hanging out? What do? How do you figure that out?
For us, we have a lot of tools that identify where they're hanging out. So we actually go in on the backside through DSPs and various digital serving platforms. Okay. So if you're various platforms in which that we can find out, okay, where are they? Where are they hanging out? Where are they going to be? And how are we then finding out the what they are looking for, right? So the various pieces, where are they? What kind of message point is going to be key to them? And then using our bidding process. So a lot of people, the programmatic space allows us now to bid where they are. Where are they going? So we find out which publications they're in now online, and we're able through programmatic to be able to bid in that process to find out where they are and to see where they are. Social media, Facebook allows us to do this. Facebook is becoming more and more difficult. You asked that question earlier about, are they on Facebook? Yes, a lot of our consumers are on Facebook, especially the older generations. Like my kids are not on Facebook. They say that's for old people, right?
Exactly.
That's Mom, that's not, that's you guys, not us. Right. So to them, that's not where they are. They're on Snapchat. They're on TikTok. Oh my word, TikTok is everything
and
to them.
And Instagram, I imagine as well, yes. But maybe that started at a little bit older demo.
It is. And actually Instagram is the middle to older millennial and female, very heavy female. If you're going to, if you have an ad set that you are looking in that, you know, 35 year old woman, your ads are going to like, especially during the pandemic, we just saw sales go up because people were bored out of their mind and they were just buying stuff on Instagram. They and they were finding problems to solve that they didn't have problems there. They just thought that they had these problems because they had more time on their hands. So with that, it's very, so the next steps are, okay, let's identify the budgets that we want to stay within. Mm-hmm. Let's identify where these personas are. And we
let's talk about budgets. Now let me interrupt you. And I want to go back to this DSP thing. Cause I want to give people some kind of a DIY solution here or tool, because in the old days, you would ask a magazine, a newspaper for their media kit. And the media kit would basically tell you, based on either some audited work that I think BPA or some other group would do, and they'd say, this is who our readers are. This is how many readers, subscribers we have. This is the, I don't think they called it sell through, but it was the readership. Like there's a 3-to-1, you know, for every newspaper, 3 people read it. Yep. And this is the age, and this is,
Remember the graphs that they used to show us?
Yeah, we used to see all that kind of stuff.
Always a visual and printed out on a paper.
DSP is giving the same kind of information, I imagine, just on the digital platforms. Is that right?
Yep, so DSP, and so there's lots of different DSPs out there. There's
hundreds. Okay.
So, and it's actually can be very confusing. People like me try to take the confusion out of it. Like that's, our goal is to try to take the confusion out of it. And frankly, it not cost you an arm and a leg, because if you actually want to have your own DSP, it's very expensive. It's not a cheap thing. It's a true investment to be able to go down that path. Mm-hmm. But there are options with that. People like us can help you walk through those options easily. And it actually typically doesn't cost you anything extra. It's usually a very good resource that you're able to use. But with it, what you're able to do is look at the publications, because Jonathan, you're spot on. Remember the days of you're pulling rankers, you're pulling, okay, this is all the information. These are our subscribers, and these are subscription numbers, and this is the whole full page ad is going to be this, right? And we saw all these various publications. And when I started my career, that's what it was. We didn't have anything digital to look at. We didn't have anything at our fingertips. And I look at it now and say, yes, it's overwhelming. Digital is overwhelming. There's a lot there. However, what we can do now is so targeted that I wish I could go back and tell younger me going, look, it's going to get really cool and it's going to be a fun ride, because there's a lot of stuff there, right? There's a lot of great things you can do. You don't have to guess where your consumer is anymore. And I think that's where people try to make it more confusing than it actually is. And frankly, that's to benefit, right? Like people try to take and make it more confusing so that brands have to go to them directly so that they can, you know, consume it all there together. And are there some amazing agencies out there that help you? Absolutely. And they are there to help, and they are great at helping. And you just want to make sure, though, for you as a brand, that you're looking at what options are there, everything that's out there. But it can be very overwhelming because there's thousands of them.
And it's not always that easy, by the way.
Oh, like, gosh, you know, no.
I mean, if my ideal client profile is a next generation leader millennial in a family business, typically in an unsexy industry, let's say they're construction or real estate or property management or business services, not so easy to identify. Because there isn't a list of family businesses. You could be creative, I suppose, and find 2 or more people that have the last name out of business,
right?
But not so easy. So I want to dispel the notion that it's easy to always figure out who you know, where they're hanging out. I think that's a lot of the magic that you guys provide. So.
And when you're looking at it, you know, you really can. I will tell you that there is the it's interesting that you say the next generation, because I think and I know that's where you hang out a lot. Right. Mm-hmm. And a lot of brands, we're seeing a shift, right, more and more from older generations to the next generation, whether it's family or whether it's employee purchase, whether like it's multiple level and how things are happening. But we're seeing this happen. And I, you tell me, you're the expert in it, but I think I've seen a shift during COVID a little bit more accelerated than was before. Like, okay, you know what? Actually, yeah, I'm ready to retire. I'm ready to sell this. I'm ready to get out. Or, you know, here's my succession plan. This is where I'm headed. Here's my runway.
I'm not sure the answer to that query, by the way, because we heard a lot of people in the Great Resignation leaving, but it seemed like they were leaving jobs.
They weren't leaving ownerships, right?
My guess is, because we talked years ago, we talked about this silver wave where people with the gray hair would be getting out of business. And I think what ends up happening is people just said, no, you know, I don't have the money that I thought I was going to have. Maybe the 2008 crash, I'm still recovering from it, or some other, you know, downturn. Maybe the COVID was a downturn significantly. And so we have, I think, a tendency towards people half retiring, where they're maybe cut down to 2 or 3 days or 10 or 15 hours, but they're still hanging on. And, you know, so.
Yeah.
You know,
and I'm with you on that, because I think what we're seeing is I want to retire, but I'm not ready to retire. And we see more, but what does that play to the next generation that is taking over? You have an owner that's working two days a week. They're kind of checked out. They're there. They're bringing the expertise. They're talking to clients when they need it and talking to customers when you need it. But at the same time, that next generation is caring. How do I evolve this company to the next level? How do I take this to the next level?
It's a big challenge because somewhere on some level, they feel like mom or dad or whoever that person is sort of in the way a little bit.
Yep.
And yet they don't control the purse strings. I mean, they might have the check signing authority, but to go out and let's not talk about purchases, but to really grow the company.
Yeah.
They're not necessarily benefiting so much because at the end of the day, they're growing the business that their mom or dad own. And maybe a long time before they see those benefits.
Exactly. And those are all those pieces in it. And I'll tell you, I think brands more and more, small or big, are in companies as a whole are looking for new ways to target their generation, who they are trying to target and who their customer is. And right now it seems more confusing than it actually is, but there are resources out there. There are ways to study this. There are ways to get a hold of people. And really I think that people need to just take a step back, take a breath of fresh air. It's okay. Look at everything, because you can learn from the history of the company that you've been in, right? The company has history. And I'm a big believer that history always tells us a story.
Yep.
But data also tells us a story, right? So in the digital space, when we're looking at things, that data is going to tell us a story of where our customers are hanging out. How do we get the old world and the new world to come together? And how do we get this to work together to then elevate the brand and the company?
All right. So I want to get into this generational marketing, but I posed a question earlier and I think we need to come back to it. And I think it's a question that people pose to me, and that's why I'm sharing it. It's like, okay, well, how much of a budget should I spend on this? And so my answer to them often is, let's take a look, first of all, at what your industry is spending. And if it's an industry, I work a lot in the landscape industry. It's pretty easy to figure that out in terms of what other landscapers, not specific companies, are spending, but in general, in your region or in the country, what percentage of your total revenues are being spent on advertising and promotion. And I say to them, look, if you really want to gain market share, you're probably going to have to outmarket and outsmart your competition. And what I mean by that is you have to outspend them in marketing and you have to spend it smarter. And so where your name is ubiquitous and people see it in multiple places and you start taking market share away from these other companies. But that only works if it's working and the leads are being generated and you're converting them. So obviously you have to maybe fix some of their sales processes. But that's just a starting place. How do they rationalize, in your mind, how do you rationalize a budget spend or allocation for marketing?
Quite a few things now is really looking at the sales funnel. How many leads are you expecting to come out of this? And in today's world with digital and in the programmatic space, you really can see, okay, this is how many leads I'm expected to see. There are various pieces and tools. I'm going to go back to the first thing that you said is looking at your competitors. We have tools and we subscribe to these tools and they're expensive tools and we use them all day long. And our clients have access to them through us, but that we use for our clients. But we can look and see what are your competitors spending and do an audit. The first thing you do is look at, okay, what is your brand audit? Where am I standing with my competition? These are my top three competitors. This is approximately what they're spending. And then what am I spending and what am I looking at? And then where are they targeting? Where are they? What are they doing? How am I lining up to where my competitors are and how they are doing it? So you have, like you said, you have to outmarket them, but you really have to outsmart them. It's not necessarily always outmarketing them. We see a lot of times where it's a David and Goliath situation where you're going up such a big brand and maybe this is an international company that's wanting to just dip its toe in the water in the US and see how it does and kind of just pick a few tested markets and go from there. But it's the strategy of it, right? And it is the making sure that you know where you're targeting, identifying that customer, not to beat a dead horse, but identifying that customer. And then where are they? Again, of, okay, let's identify where they are. Then where is that spend? And how much of that, how much am I willing to spend based off of where my competitors are? But that audit and looking really, truly a strategic audit of what your brand is compared to your competitors is one of the first things you need to look at doing. And they're not expensive to do. They're very worthwhile, the investment, because you're going to be able to see what your customers are looking at as options for them and where they are. So that's the first step, is to look at it. And then don't be scared, because there are ways that you can market that maybe isn't huge. Maybe it's not a huge budget, but you are able to make an impact with things, you know, and make sure that you're making at least some form of impact to be able to do more with it.
I find it interesting, and maybe I want to challenge this a little bit, that you could actually know what your competitors are spending, because there's so many intangible ways that competitors spend money on. I mean, these might be projects in the community. They might be local newspaper or, publicity. Or as an example, small businesses might hang out in chambers of commerce or in networking groups. They might be involved in their trade association. They might be publishing articles and magazines. So a lot of that is very intangible, and it's not a direct spend, but it's part of their marketing program, and it creates visibility. And I would think impossible to measure.
It's impossible to measure the full brand impression, right?
Right.
Correct. I mean, you could try to guess and look at Coca-Cola. Okay, here's the full brand impression, right? But that's like how long of a history we're talking about here. But when it comes to digital, you can look at the spend based on what we can see their impressions are. So we have the tools to be able to pull it specifically in the digital space.
Okay, so let's talk about this digital stuff and let's talk about media buying 101 in the age of where more money is being spent on digital than in traditional media, probably, or not yet. Where have the tides turned? And like, so give us the 101 education on where is the money being spent? Does it depend upon the generation that you're marketing to? Yep. Does it depend on the market that you're in? Like you talked about La Crosse, Wisconsin versus New York City. Give us a little 101 that we haven't covered
and
already.
All of it is, it depends on your brand right at the gate. But media buying 101 starts very briefly of taking that step back and looking at who your customer is and finding out who that is and then finding out where they are. And then we identify the budgets that go with it. The big misnomer today is that traditional media is dead. People think, okay, there's no TV, there's no radio, there's no reason to do that. Everything's streaming, everything's online. This is how I need to be there. And that's just not accurate. We are seeing the days because of COVID and because of the shift. So anytime actually in American history, we see consumption. So 9/11 showed us this also. When 9/11 took place, morning news became extremely important. People started paying attention more to morning news because they wanted to know that the world that they went to bed to was the same world that they were waking up to. So that 6 a.m., 7 a.m. morning news was one of the most important slots for a certain demographic. And it was the working class. It was the, you know, the middle of the road, that 30 to 50 year old person that really cared about that. And frankly, we even saw it in younger generations too during 9/11. So we saw that then with COVID again. Anytime we have a crisis, anytime we have anything, we see patterns repeat itself. And it's very fast. 08 and 09 is the same thing. But if there is a true, genuine crisis, national, international, and it is something that we've never experienced before, we consume media to get the information that we need to make us feel prepared and to make us feel ready. And to be able to make the changes and the decisions that we need to make for our families. So it's a very individualized, but very broad habit that we see happen. So I would say right now, you know, traditional platforms are not going away at all. The other thing that to keep in mind when it comes to traditional across all demographics, live entertainment became so important once it came back. We lost, I remember during the pandemic, I hear my son who in the middle of the pandemic, he's 10. And I hear him yelling, you know, I'm from South Jersey originally. I hear him go, go Phillies, go Phillies. And I'm like, there's a Phillies game on. And I freaked out. No, he's watching old YouTube Phillies games because he wants live entertainment so badly because there is no live game. There is nothing for him to watch. And that is something when it was taken away from us, that live entertainment was taken away from us. Now we like to consume, look at the World Series, look at everything. We want to consume that those live events more than we ever have before. So when people say that the traditional platforms are dead, it's not true at all. We just have to buy it for its strengths.
Well, I think that's really interesting because as we're speaking, there is a crisis going on in the Ukraine with Russia. Yes. And I know, not to make a joke, but to actually to turn this into a little joke, I know you can see Russia from where you are. But no, it's I find very much I'm the younger part of the baby boomer, and I'm looking at and wanting to watch the news at night and in the morning, and I'm looking at the newspapers, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, to find out like what updates are happening.
Yeah,
and so I think that that's really interesting. Can you speak to the, you know, CPM, cost per thousand? That was always the measure of, you know, how much is it costing me for every thousand impressions that I'm making? Where do you get more bang for your buck? Traditional media or digital media? Or I'm sure the answer is it depends, but maybe you could give us some examples.
It does. I will tell you your CPM with digital is more accurate. So okay, your CPM with digital is very measurable, very precise. Accurate. Sure. You know exactly what it's going to be. It is more of a guessing game with traditional. And the smaller the market, it's a bigger guessing game because we don't have our diaried markets are not as widespread. Diaries are harder and harder to get information by. Our metered markets are the big markets only, right? So because that's an investment on all of the ratings houses. And so it's your most predictable CPM is going to be on your digital space. You can guess, you can look at things and you can see where you are on TV. I like to look at a cost per point even more than a CPM when it comes to traditional, just because it feels like it just gives a little bit more accuracy when I'm looking at GRPs and I'm looking at cost per point and comparing that. It gives us the benchmarks and the goals that we want to look at.
But what's for the point, sure, Marianne?
A rating point.
Gotcha. And okay.
So your GRPs are your gross rating points. This is what my overall, this is what I'm looking at. And then this is my CPP is my cost per point.
Okay.
And so that's a more measurable in the traditional sense for TV and radio. When it comes to print, that's more circulation than it is anything. And frankly, print online is bought better programmatically than it is directly. Not always. There are some trade pubs that you can go to directly and get some information, but that's when it comes to CPMs, digital is the most predictable because it's actuals.
But I'm guessing that it's still much cheaper than the traditional media.
So what we've seen in the traditional platforms, and this is why I'm a big advocate of buying traditional for its strengths, not just buying it for the sake of buying it. Mm-hmm. And frankly, that's the same thing with digital. You buy it for its strengths, not just to buy it, right? You have to buy it strategically. But when it comes to traditional platforms, we see, and we saw this evolution in print too. And I remember the days where the newspaper reps, they were the ones that had they had the line pockets. They could take clients to dinner. They could take clients anywhere because their expense accounts were so high because papers made so much money. Newspapers are not making as much money nowadays, right?
No.
So you think about these empires that were actually built around newspapers. And now, not as much. So when you look at that, unfortunately, the way television and radio have started to evolve is they try to offer digital platforms of their services and other things. They try to offer DSPs, but their CPMs are still really, really high. And it's because, so they try to do DSPs through the product. Usually they are not an actual seat on a DSP. They are a pass-through, then a pass-through. So their CPMs are through the roof and very high on the digital platform. But then their ratings, and so to get wonky and to get really nerdy about data for a second, what we also have found is the consumption has spread very thin. So I'm not loyal to just one radio station anymore. I listen to 13 because it's whatever I want to listen to, right? So it used to be that I would get a 4 or 5 rating. And when I pulled a ranker of a top radio station, now all of them are 0.5, 0.5, 0.8, 0.3. They're all almost equal to each other, but their rates haven't changed. So your CPM is still the same, but my ratings are not the same. And so I'm paying the same cost, even though the ratings have gone down. And that's where traditional has not evolved.
Well, this can get very nerdy, I think.
Yes, it can really quick.
And I hope we haven't lost anyone in the last few
minutes.
I know. But I want to ask a more basic question that also comes across my desk a lot, which is I find people contact me and say they're frustrated with the marketing agencies, be it digital or media, be it in your space or just, digital marketing. They have it. They were promised the world. They didn't get that at all. And this is a common complaint. So how do we as professionals restore trust in the media agency, media buying agency, the digital agency? How do we restore that trust?
Well, first, PSA to agencies, own who you are and be strong in who you are, but be honest. Honesty is the key thing. And if we can't have radical candor with each other and have direct conversations with clients, that is what breaks the trust right out of the gate. And I know, and I say this to thousands of clients on a regular basis. I say it all the time. I know the reputation media agencies have had. I know what they are. And my job is to buck that every day so that you can feel like you can trust us. We're going to be upfront. We're going to be candid. But frankly, as marketing professionals, that is our job, is be candid with the client. Under promise and over deliver regularly. Do not over promise. Do not say just yes, because that's what the client wants to hear. Actually deliver on the product of what you can deliver. And if, frankly, if that doesn't work and you don't get the contract, it's not worth it. Don't go down that path. You need to be able to deliver what you have and what you are able to, your expertise. And I will go one step further. Agencies, own who you are and find out what your niche is. Find out who that target audience is for you too. Own your space. Go down and feel, don't be too generalist. Become an expert in one area. It's a lot easier when you become an expert in one area to own that space, to be there, as opposed to trying to be everything to everybody. No, own the space that you're in and become that expert, because then frankly, clients stick around a lot longer because they know that you're that expert and they become to trust you.
Well, it sounds like one of your expertise is to be a generational marketing expert.
And I love it. It's a passion of mine.
It's because you're between one generation and the next. And I don't know what that's called, but it's not a tweener. I don't think.
I call it like the bridge generation there's lots of other ways that people have said it, but I'm literally the end of Gen X and the beginning of millennial. And I also call it a sandwich generation. I am that sandwich generation. Where technically I'm the first year of a millennial, but I'm way too old to be a millennial. Sometimes I look at the millennial generation and I'm like, we do not connect. We're not the same thing. So
I said we would talk about generational marketing, and we've only kind of danced around it. And it's such a big topic. I don't even know how to approach the topic without maybe a specific case example, but you know, I could imagine there would be a great infographic that would really show and shed light on where your market is, how to, you know, where they're hanging out, how to find them. Could you share some of your wisdom on generational marketing?
Absolutely. So I think it's, so to me, it's a love and a passion, and I always have had this. And I remember when, you know, when I was in media, and there was a very good friend of mine that was a baby boomer, and he and I were selling competing stations, and his station was the, you know, the baby boomer stations, and mine was the younger Gen X stations, right? And we'd compete all the time, loved each other, competed. And I remember him saying, well, the baby boomers are the ones that have spending money. And I was like, really? They're the ones that have the spending money always? And he goes, yeah, they're the influencers. They're the ones with the money. I was like, the only ones. They're the only ones, right? And he goes, yeah. And I said, so those jeans, I said, I really like the jeans you're wearing. He goes, yeah, my son picked them out. And I said, oh, you mean you're not the only ones that have influence. Your younger son picked out your jeans that you as a baby boomer are wearing. He literally turned around and just walked away. He goes, I don't want to talk to you, right? And we're still friends to this day. And great. But my point to everybody is every generation influences the other generation in a different way. And the marketing side of that is, how do we get, every generation has that emotion because we're all human, right? That's the common thread that we have, is that their emotion is there. But an older generation, my father, who was born right after World War II, is going to react differently to something than me, that any type of reaction. His reaction to COVID is different than my reaction to COVID, right? And so all of us, and it's because it's based on life experience. And when we're looking at marketing, it's based on life experience. And oftentimes as marketers, we try to put everybody in the same basket and reach them. Right. And we're just like, okay, you know what? You're all in the same basket because you're all the same family. I promise you, my father, who's, you know, 78 years old, is going to consume things differently and think differently than my 15-year-old son. They just are. And that's based on life experience. And so we as marketers often lump sum everybody together, and we don't think about what each generation is actually going through to then reach them with that message. Every generation, and if you break it down, and you're right, infographics are great in this, but if we break down every generation through everything right now, you made a huge point with Ukraine and Russia, the Ukraine crisis that's happening right now. Each generation is feeling that differently. Mm-hmm. Every generation is feeling that emotion differently based on their life experience. And they're going to consume media differently based on their life experience. And people on the West Coast are going to pay more attention than the people in the Midwest, because it's their livelihood, it's their coast. Who knows what's going to happen? I'll tell you, earlier today, I was on a client call, and I'm hearing jets behind me because the Air Force Base is behind me. And I knew that, okay, I know what's happening. I know they're running exercises.
Wow.
My experience with that's going to be different. It's going to be different than another person's experience that doesn't have the Air Force Base right behind them, right? That literally, sure, you can't see Russia. You know, but generationally, what is the common thread? Common thread is everybody has an emotion. Everybody has that emotion. But what is it that everything that's happening in our world, what's being triggered in that emotion, right? What are the various pieces that are happening, and how is each generation responding? And then how are we providing that solution for them, for that generation, for that generation, for that generation, and stop lumping them together as one basket of people.
That's great. Well, you are obviously very passionate about
this. I love generational studies. It's very fascinating. I could talk about it all day.
So, Marianne, you have an agency. It's called Mosaic Media. People can find you at mosaic.agency. Tell me, who is your ideal client? I know you serve a lot of different types. So who should be contacting you if they're still listening to this and thinking, like, I want this woman's wisdom? You know,
yeah. So our ideal clients are agencies that have clients that need help. That agencies, either you have your media department needs help in auditing and knowing exactly is your media department up to snuff? Is it where it needs to be? That's right. An ideal customer for us. But then also brand in-house agencies or the small customer that frankly just needs help with their media portion of their marketing plan. We come in and we help. We really have that heart of service to help you with that media portion. And frankly, it doesn't cost you a lot of money. There are lots of solutions on every budget out there. So, Yeah. So we love to help the whole spectrum. But if you need help in the paid media space, you are our ideal client, period. So
it's a train the trainer model, it sounds like. Yep. It's a coach the agency model. Yep. Or the in-house marketing group.
Yep. So we come in a lot with agencies, and we train your team. We look and assess your team. Where are they? Where are they bottlenecking? Where do they need help? What are things that you can do to set up those things for efficiencies? And then in-house, when bigger brands bring us in all the time, they're doing all their creative, they're doing all their content, but they're just struggling to try to, okay, strategically, where do I need to be? And frankly, if you're a smaller brand, you feel that way too. If I have reps calling me all the time, I don't know what to do. I'm not sure where to put everything. And it's just really, it's organizing that for you and funneling it for you so that you're not the bottleneck.
Okay. Final question.
Yeah.
So a lot of times I see people leading in their marketing, and that marketing might be on LinkedIn in their profile. It might be on their website. And I'm speaking to family businesses now, but they'll say, we're our family owned or family run company, or we are locally owned and family run. And I think that works great in certain markets. And I mean, markets like I want to hire a plumber that's probably multi-generational, because plumbing is something that is not easily taught.
Right.
It's handed down as kind of an education. But a lot of times I'll tell my clients, that might be really irrelevant to your customer, the fact that you're family owned. I think you need to get to, what does that mean to them? So I want to ask you, what are your thoughts on leading with that message?
So first, you're getting one chance to have a lead message, period. Is that the first thing and the only thing that you want them to remember about you, is that you're family owned? That's extremely important. And if you are, like you said, if you're a plumber, if you're in Minnesota and you're a plumber, yes, say that, because of the fact that in the wintertime when pipes are freezing and things are like, they want a multi-generational family owned company to come help them and a plumber that can come help them. But if you are trying to go broader, being family owned, it does say something. It's not bad. But at the same time, some of the largest companies in America are family owned, but they don't use that as their brand.
Exactly. Yeah.
So at the end of the day, what is it gaining you to say family owned? What is that the first impression that they will remember that first, because that's what they're hearing first? Does that make you seem too small for them? Or is it just right-sized? And is that the one thing that you want them to remember you for?
I like it. Marianne Pruitt, thank you so much. So
thank
people can
you, Jonathan.
Find you. Best way to reach you would be on LinkedIn or on... Yep.
So and you can email me anytime. It's marianne@mosaic.agency. So
sounds good. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jonathan. I really appreciate it.
All right. It was great having you. And folks, if you got some value from this, give us a good rating on your podcast listening app of choice. Share it with others and stay tuned for future episodes. Thanks a lot.
This podcast is sponsored by myself, Jonathan Goldhill, and my company, the Goldhill Group, where we provide coaching for growing companies. I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and my purpose is simple: to guide entrepreneurial leaders in family businesses towards more freedom and fulfillment. I want entrepreneurs to get clarity around the changes that will make them and their businesses more successful, so they can experience the same freedom I've enjoyed in my life. Our proven practices challenge business owners to think differently about their business and how they're running it, and quite literally become game changers in our clients' companies. Learn more at the goldhillgroup.com website, where you can schedule your free strategy session.
Thank you for joining us on the Disruptive Successor Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe, review, and share with a friend who would benefit from the message. If you're interested in picking up a copy of my book, Disruptive Successor, go to disruptivesuccessor.com.